Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome back to the show Jonathan Kaiser. Now, Jonathan is the founder and thought leader behind Kaiser, the largest occupier services commercial real estate brokerage firm in Arizona. An Inc. 5000 company, Kaiser has rapidly become one of the fastest growing firms of its kind in the country, and he serves companies and their real estate needs globally. Now, when Jonathan entered the cutthroat dog-eat-dog world of CRE brokerage, he found that he became the worst version of himself, and he really hated himself because of it. So one day he decided he'd had enough as he realized he was sacrificing his values in pursuit of success. I think that's kind of a common thing. He abandoned his ruthless ways and reinvented himself as a selfless leader, which skyrocketed his brokerage firm to 8 figures in 5 years. His selfish service approach to business has resonated with corporations and individuals seeking a competitive edge to acquiring and maintaining clients. This doesn't have to be just real estate. It can be anybody. And we talked, I think, the last time he was here, because he was my guest in December. I think we talked a good bit about servant leadership and, you know, why you have to be decent people and treat people right. So today we're going to pick up where we left off. Jonathan, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Thank you for inviting me back. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, we had so much to chat about that I remember kind of, I do this on the podcast, I'll wait till the end and realize that we didn't get anywhere near as far as we wanted to get, and I invite you back on the show. So you can't tell me
we were having too much fun.
So I always go, can you come back? And you can't say no because you're on the radio and, you know, people would hate you for it. So here we are. Yeah. So things have happened a lot. There's been a lot of things happening in America and globally since we spoke last in December. So is there anything you want to touch on before I start peppering you with questions?
I just think it's always been important, but more than ever, the need for conscious, selfless leadership throughout business, politics, and society is more evident than ever. And I think if everyone would adopt this mindset of love and service towards their fellow human being and looking for ways to serve and to love and to help them, then I think we can all move forward as a society. And I think that's one of the biggest things that's lacking is this reaching across the aisle, so to speak, or you know, loving those who may be different from you. So I think, you know, one of my good friends, John Mackey, who founded Conscious Capitalism, and he was the founder of Whole Foods, still is the CEO to this day. You know, he's coming out with a new book in September called Conscious Leadership. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the leaders highlighted in that book. And he talks about the need for conscious leadership today and the extreme lack of it and how that's leading to so many of our challenges. So, yeah, I think that, you know, today's events, tomorrow's events, yesterday's events, they're indicative of, in my opinion, a lack of that selfless love and service, which, again, we're talking about it in my book, and you don't have to be ruthless to win, and in my company, Kaiser, in a business context, but it certainly is true throughout society.
Oh, without question, and congratulations on being part of his book. That's terrific.
Thank you.
I've been watching this with, I'm telling you, Jonathan, I'll never need a facelift my eyebrows are permanently up in my hairline. I mean, I'm constantly going, what? What are you people doing? What? Does this even make sense? We're being bludgeoned by a very small subset of people, and it's being allowed instead of us saying, hey, you know, calm down and let's talk about this. They fight, we fight back. It's just getting horrible. I can't, let's not even go down that road, but you're right. I think if we were to all step back a bit and say, listen, what's going on? How can I help you? How can you help me? Why don't we chat instead of, you know, throwing rocks?
Yeah, and I think it's, and I think that it's so easy for us, even without realizing that we're doing it, to be part of the problem, right? I mean, part of what selfless leadership is it's really seeking to understand the pain on the other side. And so if we're just looking at the actions, and this goes both ways, right? This is I don't even like that there's sides. We're all people. We're all humanity. You know, we're all part of you know, this journey together. And if we don't have empathy in every, you know, in every direction, if we're not really trying to understand what is causing the upset, then we're really missing the point. And to me, this is the opportunity for us to all engage in conversation. And it can't be a one-sided conversation. It has to be a conversation where everybody's really engaging in empathetic dialogue to figure out how we move forward as a society. So while it's very disruptive, I think there's some seeds being planted today that are really going to help with the awakening that I believe is coming in the world, and I'm excited for that.
I know what you're talking about. I catch myself watching and listening to some of this, and like I say, my eyebrows just inch up, and then I take my fingers and push them back down because I don't want to have lines across my forehead. And that's purely, you know, me being silly. But there are, I'll read some of this, and my first knee-jerk reaction is never positive. It's almost never positive, and that's just because most of us will react that way. But once I let it percolate a bit, then I start finding different approaches and different thoughts and, you know, different things that maybe resonated with me or didn't. And then I start going, okay, where can we go with this? What can I think about this? What can I do about this? Who can I talk with about this? Who do I just ignore some of this? There's a lot of thinking that's going on amongst all the burning of bridges, literally. But I agree with you. I think that something at some point is going to either break open and we all go, you know, this is stupid. You know, this is not working. How about if we try something a little bit different? Or, okay, you made your point. Now where do we go with it? So there's an awful lot of thinking going on. And it's not all bad.
So what's new in your world?
Oh, gosh. Had I muted you? Could you hear me?
I could, yeah. I could hear you.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, good. Because I thought, oh, geez, I lost him. You know, the usual. Let's talk about everything is good, really. I don't know. I don't really bother to complain much. It doesn't do any good and gives me a headache. So everything is great. Okay, so let's talk about where we left off. When we spoke last time, we talked about why helping others was crucial to developing a sustainable and successful business, kind of what you were talking about just now, and the five things that get in the way of living out your true value. So I wanted to ask you, and I don't think I had the opportunity last time, why you pursue intentional imbalance in your life. Let's talk about that.
Sure. And maybe what would be helpful before I do is to give the listeners just a quick summary so they know who I am in the world and what I'm up to.
Perfect.
And what my mission is, right? So my quick story for those who missed the first podcast is I was raised by parents to love and serve, and I was raised to help others and to pay it forward. And when I lived overseas as a kid, and when we came back to the States, I got this very distinct sense that we were poor. And I didn't like being poor. So I got into commercial real estate once I graduated from college because I wanted to be rich. And as I got into commercial real estate, I realized, wow, this is a ruthless, cutthroat industry. So I became ruthless because I wanted to be successful. But I was miserable and I was misaligned with my core values, but I thought that's what it took to be successful. And then 15 years ago, I was introduced to this idea of success by helping others succeed. And I was just floored by the concept. And I thought, could this work for me? Long story short, reinvented myself around this idea of success through selfless service. And now we've built a commercial real estate firm and arguably one of the most ruthless industries in the world, commercial real estate brokerage, with a stated mission. You know, who I am in the world is I am the distinction of change to the business community. My whole mission is to show the world that you truly don't have to be ruthless to be successful, and that it's far greater than commercial real estate brokerage. I mean, obviously everybody knows that's a ruthless industry, but there's a lot of others that are ruthless as well. And so what I'm up to in the world and who I am is attempting to demonstrate that even in arguably one of the most cutthroat industries around, you can create extraordinary financial success. And I'm trying to connect a selfless service with success. And so that's kind of and then I've written a book outlining my journey and how others could create extraordinary success themselves. It's called You Don't Have to Be Ruthless to Win, and hit number one on Wall Street Journal last year. And now all of these things that are, you know, it's amazing. It's like I'm in the conversation of this very, you know, I mean, it's not like it's a new concept, the idea of loving and serving other people. We all know how to do it. We do it in our families, we do it in our homes, we do it in our social circles, and then we get into business and we somehow think that we got to put all those aside, even though we know they work because they work in our homes, and go to war in business. And so what I'm trying to do is connect those two and have an integrated life. But in the context of your question, you know, for me, I try to be intentionally imbalanced for a number of reasons. One is, you know, if you ever want to be masterful at anything, you have to be overwhelmingly committed to it. Otherwise, you're just okay at it. So for me, I live an imbalanced life because there's only a few things that I'm extraordinarily committed to, right? I'm extraordinarily committed to my family. I'm extraordinarily committed to my company, Kaiser Institute, which is, I think we talked about it last time, we created to train, empower, and ultimately certify the next generation of selfless leader. And I'm extraordinarily committed to my health, right? And outside of those things, there's really not a lot of other things that are important to me. So I don't need to have a whole bunch of hobbies. I don't need to have, I don't go to the bar. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I have drinks with people whenever I feel like I want to, but I'm not the guy that like needs to stop by the bar on the way home and, you know, drown his sorrows in a pint. Like I'm very focused on what I'm up to and what I care about, which means that I have to be willing to say no to a lot of things that might be, you know, on the surface might be fine, right? Like, hey, do you want to do this? And I always evaluate it based upon, does this fall within my, you know, my objectives with my life, my priorities in my life? And so, you know, like I'm not a golfer, and it would, one, I'm not that good, and I don't like doing things that I'm not good at, but I could get good at it if I decided and intended to, but that would take time away from the things that are really important to me. And so I think that too many people in the, you know, I'm doing little quotations here on the radio, so you can't see me, but I'm doing little quotations with my fingers in the spirit of balance, really don't put the energy, effort, and intentionality and intense focus into the things that they really want to create greatness within. And as a result, they're sort of mediocre at everything versus being masterful at the things they really care about. And so for me, I want to be the greatest dad in the world, not like comparing myself. I just, the best dad I could possibly be, I want to be. And so I have to do that. I need to have mind space for that. I need to have time. I need to have intentionality. And same thing in my business, is the only reason we've been able to grow so rapidly is because of the extreme attention, focus, and energy that I put towards it, which if I was spreading that out across 100 different initiatives, I would not have the same value. And if you look at the people that are, you know, there's a, if you watched Michael Jordan's documentary, you know, he focused all of that energy just on basketball, right? And at the expense of everything else in his life. But that's that focus that enabled him to be the greatest of all time. And so I think that that's, it's all part of it, is deciding as an individual what's important to you. And I'm not suggesting you should have to sacrifice various things, but always know that the more things that you put into your life, the more that it's an opportunity cost, right? The more it takes away from other things that, you know, if you don't have your priorities figured out on the front end, you're probably going to look back and say, man, I wish I'd have spent more time doing X than doing X.
And that makes perfect sense. When you're talking about, you know, the sports figures, I mean, Tiger Woods, I think, did something very, very similar. It was all about practicing and focusing, you know, with golf. And, you know, I have to say, you know, Tiger Woods, I mean, he made a big old mess of his life, but boy, he focused and he brought it back. I mean, he proved that he really was one of the greatest golfers ever. You know, he didn't just kind of go into a hole and go, boy, I messed that up, because he did. But he dug himself out of that hole, and you got to admire it. I mean, you really have to admire what he did. I do.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Okay, so you had mentioned
that. And I think if more people do that, I think that they will find that they're able to get more out of their life. And it frees up time for the stuff that really matters. Like, for example, I love to read, right? It's really hard to read if your life is so packed with a bunch of things that if you really look at your life, are they really priorities? Maybe, maybe not. But if reading helps build you, or coaching helps build you, or meditation helps build you, you don't have time for personal development, right? Like for me, those are my three priorities, is my family, my business, and my health. And my health includes my physical health, my psychological health, my spiritual health, right? So my emotional health. And so if that's all I have time for, if I want to apply the amount of energy towards it that I think it takes to really be extraordinary.
I agree with you. I see a lot of people just running from, well, teenagers, you know, mothers and parents with kids that are taking these kids all over the place. And I don't have children, so I, you know, I kind of just watch and see what people are doing. But it seems to me, and this is just my observation, it may have no value whatsoever, but I see these parents dragging their kids or driving their kids everywhere. They're going from one sport to piano music to this, that, and the other. And it just seems to me that these kids are not getting to really dive in to the one or two things that they really love. Maybe I'm reading that wrong, but it just seems odd to me that they wear these kids out just going all over the place without settling on one really good thing that they can shine in. I don't know. I could be dead wrong.
I don't know if you're wrong. I mean, I think there's just different opinions, right? Everybody, like, one of the things that I like to do is I think that doing different sports teaches kids different things, and it also allows them to try a bunch of things and decide what they want. So I have, from the early age of my kids, I've tried to give them different opportunities and then see where they resonated. And, you know, my kids love flag football. So they've done soccer, baseball, basketball. You know, we do winter sports. So we do skiing, we do water sports, we do wakeboarding and skiing. And, you know, they sort of decide what they want. And then I put energy towards what they want. And it's usually fun for me too, right? Like, I love being on the mountain. I love being out on the lake, and that gives me an opportunity to do something with my kids. So I do think that there's this idea of just trying to pack your kid's schedule doesn't give them time to breathe, doesn't give you time to breathe. But there's also the counterbalance to that of, you know, kids become better athletes in one sport by learning how to be in another sport. So again, parenting, I mean, we could have a whole, I'm going to write a book someday on being a dad, because it's the greatest gift of my life. But you know, I also want to give, everybody has a different parenting mindset and methodology, and I want to give them the space to teach their kids the way that they think they're the best. But for me, my favorite thing to do with my kids is just hang out with them. And we go, you know, I'll take them to the skate park and they're doing jumps on their little scooters or on their rollerblades. And, you know, but it's really driven by what they're interested in doing, not me as a dad trying to say, you know, you're going to be a professional baseball player and get out there and throw some more pitches. You know, that wouldn't be fun. It makes it not desirable. But if you know, kids naturally tend to acclimate towards a certain sport or a certain activity. And so as a parent, I want to support that. And I want to be a part of that. And I want to embrace that. And if it changes, rather than being like, but we wasted all this time and money. No, it's look, they're allowed to have a change of opinion. And the likelihood that your kid's going to be, you know, the next Michael Jordan is extraordinarily low anyways. And so it's probably just teaching them good life skills. And so if you make sports difficult and activities just, you know, overwhelming, they're not going to want to do it. They're just going to want to sit home, which then even, you know, makes the problem worse because now they're not involved in anything.
Exactly. Well, thanks for giving me that, you know, that insight, because I hadn't thought of any of it like that. I just watched these poor parents running around and complaining about it. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're wearing yourself and them out. It never occurred to me that there were reasons why this might be happening, and maybe it's just part of a winnowing out process. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no, it's my honor. And I could be completely wrong. You know, it's parenting. anybody that thinks they've got parenting figured out is dead wrong. Yeah.
I think anybody that thinks they have life figured out is dead wrong. It changes as we speak. Seriously, it does. So what are you up to now? I mean, I know that it has been about 6 months since we spoke, and there's, like I say earlier, there's a lot going on. Is there anything that is going on in your company in particular, you know, especially with work from home and, you know, remote teams? Is there anything that you're doing that our audience can go, okay, that makes sense. Let me look at that.
Yeah. I think there's a lot, you know. So for the audience, you know, what my firm does is we help tenants in commercial lease negotiations. We do more, but that's the bulk of what we do. So we're helping companies from companies that occupy office space to industrial space to healthcare or medical space to retail space to data center space, whatever it is, we help them navigate their commercial real estate leases, and we give them an advocate that's on their side. So as you can imagine, when the world is, you know, shut down because of COVID, the amount of need for our services really just skyrocketed, and everyone was trying to figure out rental relief. And so I gave maybe 40 free webinars to, you know, everything from YPO to state organizations, to cities, to business groups, just helping organizations figure out, you know, how do you negotiate rental relief? How do you navigate commercial real estate in these crazy times? And giving, you know, trying to give people some good advice. So yeah, we've been really busy with that. And part of that is, you know, we're being asked by, you know, people across the country and around the world to help them, you know, predict what's going to happen with office space. Are people going to go back to work? Is it going to be a flex work? And so we can talk about more of that in a second, but that's the immediate answer, is we have been buried just in service to helping business leaders figure out what to do with their real estate. And we've been offering anyone, and for any of your listeners, you know, what we'd offer a free review to just give you some free advice and help you navigate this time. We believe that, like we talked about before, the more people we help, the more it comes back to us, even if it's in unique and interesting ways. And here's an example of that. So since we talked, the book has hit number one, which is really a surreal experience, right? So to be number one on the Wall Street Journal bestseller list and to beat out Michelle Obama's book, to beat out Educated, the memoir, to beat out The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Blank. You know, it was really a surreal experience for me, and it opened up a bunch of doors. And so over the past 6 months, I was booking speaking gigs all across the country where to go and share the message of, you know, wow, there's this crazy commercial real estate guy named Jonathan Kaiser who has developed a successful business based upon helping people instead of being a ruthless shark. And we want to hear from him, and we want to know how he's created a culture of selfless service. And then COVID happened, and so all of those either converted to virtual presentations or remote, I mean. I don't like the word virtual because it assumes it's not you're not actually live. Got rescheduled. So that was kind of an interesting phenomenon. So kind of it pushed back some of that public facing speaking, but it's also created so many opportunities where, you know, a lot of times when the market is just booming and people assume that, you know, that they're just, when people are doing well, they're less concerned about cost containment. And so much of what we do is, hey, look, real estate's your second or third largest expense. It's the least flexible because you can lay off people, but you aren't laying off the real estate lease. And over half of corporate bankruptcies involve breaking some kind of lease. So this stuff matters. But when everybody's printing money and the economy's booming, people are less interested in that message. And it's more just grow, 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 grow. And then all of a sudden something happens like what just happened here. And we slide instantly into a recession. And now everybody's interested in cutting costs. And so it's opened up all kinds of doors, all kinds of opportunities. The kinds of relationships we developed in the last 4 months have been nothing short of amazing. We've also gotten some really interesting and cool designations, like USA Today put out a story calling us the commercial real estate industry disruptor. You know, so it's just we've got a lot of momentum, and we're you know, the key for us is staying true to our purpose, only hiring people that are truly aligned with this idea of selflessness and giving and authentically doing so. And then as we build the Kaiser Institute to train, empower, and ultimately certify the next generation of selfless leader, you know, for us, it's exciting to be able to be hopefully making a dent in the world and helping to train leaders on how they can be more conscious, be more selfless, be more aware, and, you know, to have somebody of the caliber of John Mackey write about us and highlight us in his upcoming book, which for sure will be a New York Times bestseller, is very humbling for me. And to me, it's a testament to the authenticity and the credibility of this message, right? When I first started this firm, most people thought I was crazy. They're like, dude, you're in commercial real estate. That was my West Coast coming out. You could tell I'm from Arizona. I just said, dude, you know, you're in commercial real estate and, you know, you're saying love and you're saying serve. You know, those are words that don't typically go hand in hand with commercial real estate people. And today, I feel like people are really resonating with our message, hence the reason the book hit number one. And that's very rewarding for me because I want people to shift. I want to see the world become more conscious. I want to see people become better leaders. I want to see people care, leaders care more about their people, et cetera. So for me, it's been an extraordinary last 6 months. And I'm not ignoring the pain. You know, it's like I get the opportunity to view this the way that I decide to view this. And so early on, when COVID hit, I made an intentional decision that I was going to be grateful for it. I was going to lean into it. I wasn't going to resist it or resent it. And that I was going to create for myself that COVID happened to help me. And when I created that for myself and reinforced that every morning in my daily, you know, meditation, it started to show up for me how that was true. And so today, as I open my eyes and I look across, sure, I see a lot of pain and disruption, but I see so much good that is coming out of this and so much opportunity that it basically allowed our firm to leapfrog a couple years just because of the intense needs that are being created and the opportunities that were created out of it. But again, my mindset had to be focused on that from the beginning for that to be a reality. And so I'm grateful that I was able to have that vision from the beginning. So while most people are stressed and worried, you know, we're working as hard as our little legs will carry us and trying to serve as many people as possible.
And I love to hear that story. I had largely the same idea. You know, people will say, are you okay? How's your business? I'm busier now than I've ever been. But I did the same thing unconsciously. I couldn't even begin to put it as clearly as succinctly as you just did. But it just occurred to me that people needed my help. They needed my company to step up and say, hey, you know, you may not be working with our company anymore. I mean, what I did the first week of, and I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit because I don't even know why I did it. But I looked at what my current clients needed. You know, they were being shut down left, right, and center, Illinois, New York. And I went, oh, geez. So I immediately jumped on their websites and, you know, I put up the COVID information and their shutdown information. And then I went through my back roster of every client I've ever touched in my entire career. And I did a website audit for every one of them. And I sent it to them. I said, listen, I don't know if your team knows this or you guys just kind of busy or worried about getting remote very quickly, but this is what your people need to know. And I gave them a whole raft of information. I don't know why I did it. It just had to happen. And it worked. Awesome. I mean, it worked for me because all of a sudden people are going, oh my gosh. And they're either saying, can we work with you again or can I refer you? I was like, sure, absolutely. That actually wasn't my intention. My intention was these people are in trouble and I have to help them.
It's beautiful.
Well, it's
beautiful.
It was interesting.
And that's what I mean. That's part of what I mean by the opportunities that I think are going to be good for community and worldwide enlightenment out of this. I think that it's stirring up things that need to be dealt with. And as we deal with them as a world, I think it's going to create a more conscious, a more loving, a more service-based. But, you know, change is messy. And so rather than focusing on, you know, on the things about this transformation that are uncomfortable or that seem unreasonable to some, just understand that nothing great was ever created without some pain, disruption, and mess. And I think, you know, it's not like this is the beginning of this worldwide awakening, but it's almost like somebody hit a fast forward on it. It's been building for a while. And I think it's good. I think that the more that it's consistent with my message of, can we all just love each other and serve each other? So yeah, I think that the business opportunities being created, you know, there's this term tone deaf that I like to use. I didn't even come up with it, but I heard it and I thought it was so appropriate, where the organizations that are out there selling, sounding predatorial in this time, they're completely tone deaf. They're missing it. The way to be, if you're in business, the way to be right now is just to be in service to others. And the people that do that on the other side of this thing are going to be the ones that people remember, the ones that, that have an impact. And people won't forget the ones that were just out selfishly marketing themselves the entire time. And so, you know, I think it's really important that as a business community, we all take that mindset of how do we serve? How do we love? Now that's what Kaiser was built upon. And so for us, it's what we do every single day. And this has just given us the opportunity to do it in a way that where people are more and more desperate and more in pain and looking for ways to cut their real estate costs. But it's a consistent theme across our entire company. And it's what we built it on, and which is why it's been so extraordinary to have such intense opportunities to help people.
And see, that's an amazing story. One of the questions that just popped into my head while you were talking is, and you know, we've all seen, you know, the, if we're on social media, if we're paying attention to our news that we're getting online, we know that a lot of businesses are being, you know, Nordstrom's took bankruptcy. There's a lot of businesses that are just shutting down. There are some businesses, restaurants in particular, took a horrible hit, that are just boarding up their windows. And they're saying, oh, you know, I can't pay the rent. I can't get people in here. I can't serve food. But that leads me down another very dark path. What happens when landlords are all of a sudden finding out that their buildings got burned in rioting and that they're destroyed? How do they cope? I mean, do you have any way to help those people?
I mean, I think the key is don't allow someone's behavior to cause you to do something that's inconsistent with your beliefs. Things are going to happen, whether they are intentional or not. Hard things are going to occur. The question is not what occurred and creating all kinds of narratives around how it's unfair and it shouldn't have happened and the people that did it are bad. But
right.
Who are you going to be? How are you going to react when those things happen? Because they happen to everybody. That's just one unique example. And so I think that's a perfect example of where empathy is needed more than ever. It's looking to understand what's underneath it, not justifying behavior that you may think is inappropriate, but loving the individuals. You know, there's a story that I heard one time, which I think is a perfect example of this. So there's this guy, this is a fictional story, but just as a concept, guy on a train, and he had three kids, and the kids were running around and being noisy and bumping into people, and the people around him were getting more and more frustrated because he appeared to be, you know, to not care, and he appeared to be just, you know, not paying attention. He's just looking out the window while his kids create all these disruption. And finally, as the frustration in the train builds, a lady leans over and in a very irritated voice says, sir, can you please control your children? And the guy looks up really like in a daze and says, oh, yeah, sorry. Their mom just died and I haven't figured out how I'm going to tell them. And in that instant, right, as soon as you hear the story, in that instant, when you think, oh my gosh, the guy's not being a jerk, he's trying to figure out how to tell his kids their mother has just passed. You have a different view of him as an individual. Instead of being this irresponsible parent that's just like doesn't care about everybody else around him, they realize the pain that he's in. And so what most people don't realize is that people are drowning, right? And if someone's drowning and you lean close to the water and they reach up and they grab your neck, are they attacking you? No. They're literally trying to survive. They're trying to not die. And you're the closest thing to try to save their life. And I think that's how we need to view so much of this is it doesn't justify bad behavior. But if you understand what's underneath the pain of someone who's willing to go to extreme lengths and put themselves in harm's way, what does that mean about their internal state of being? And if you could at least have a level of empathy for that, if you could at least have a mindset where you empathize with the humanity, even if you have to take action, I think it enables you to not allow all of those things that tend to occur in our lives. Like most people go from one crisis to the next and they're always frustrated. Why does all this bad stuff happen to me? What if you took a different view and said, everything is a gift. Everything is being given to me to help grow me. Everybody's just around me is just doing the best they can, just like I am. So I'm not going to go get mad at them because they're doing the very best they can. And if I viewed the world the way that they view the world, I'd do the exact same thing because that's why they're doing what they do. So yeah, for me, it's what's needed today is empathy. And what makes it worse is, you know, this everybody digging their trenches, buying figurative armament and, you know, going to war. This world needs less of that and needs more love. And again, on the other side of this disruption we're going through, this chaos, on the other side of it, I think we're gonna enter into a more empathetic world. I know it's hard to see right now. I know, you know, transitions, like I said before, are messy, And I know that, you know, that there's a lot of people that are very concerned with the future of the world. But I'm telling you, if you look at change and how it occurs, this is a normal part of transformation of society. And I don't think it's a transformation for the worse. And I think a lot of the things that are on the extreme side, and there's, trust me, there's stuff on every side, so no one's hands are clean. If this brings us more closely together as a society, I think that it'll be extraordinary.
Jonathan, historically, don't we have these huge upheavals about every 100 years?
I'm not a historian, so I don't know, but I know that if you look at any time there's significant change, there's always an upheaval of sorts, and it doesn't justify the upheaval. It doesn't vilify it either. It's part of change. Change is hard for people, and the world's going through a lot of change right now. So I'm very hopeful and positive that on the other side of all this, there's going to be extraordinary benefit that we all realize. And the majority of that to me is locking arms with people, having empathy, serving, giving, paying it forward. I mean, that's the world that I envision, right? I write about that in the book, is I dream of a world where people selflessly help each other, regardless of personal gain, understanding that it's in their own best interest. It's their own personal best interest to do so. And I think that that's what's coming, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I watch this, and I learn, and I listen, and some of it makes me go, you have got to be kidding me, and I say a bad word or so, and then I go on. But I don't see this as a really horrible time in our lives. Yeah, it's bad. I mean, for a lot of people, it's bad. For other people, it's like, hey, we got this. Yeah, I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing. I'm going to do better, and I'll help as many people as I can. Which leads me back to you. How did you go from being this kind of ruthless, in your word, cutthroat person to discovering selfless service? What was the catalyst for that?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So for me, we all have our demons. My demons were, I grew up poor and I didn't want to be poor. And so in my mind, it was whatever I need to do to not end up poor like my parents, which is why when I was faced with the dilemma of, in my mind, I didn't see another path yet. You know, when I got into the industry, it was either behave like everybody else behaves or get trampled. At least that's what I believed. I don't believe that today, but that's what I believed at the time. And so from that mindset, all I saw was the path. But underneath it, it's not like I was desiring to be that way. I felt like that's what I needed to do to get ahead. And so for me, the transformation started with the realization that there was another way that was possible to create success that didn't have to be that way, that there was the possibility of a different path. And then as I explored that path and decided to take the big, bold step of becoming that selfless leader, there was so many, it's not like, you know, so many people talk about change and transformation like it's an overnight thing. And they just wake up having an epiphany. And I've had plenty of those as well. But, you know, this is a long, hard journey to become a selfless leader. The reason why most people don't do it is because, one, it's hard. And it's hard because it requires you to authentically look at yourself, identify where you're screwed up and where you're getting in your own way, and work hard on those things to self-correct and improve. Now, that's a lifelong, you know, journey, and that's something that I'm in the middle of every day. And for most people, that's too uncomfortable. So, but for me today, that's my drug of choice. I love that really nauseating feeling when my coach or someone else helps identify in me something that's ugly, that is not consistent with who I am and what I believe to be true, and helps me get that out of the way. And that for me is an extraordinary gift. And so if you look back to your question, as I went down this path, the momentum began to build, and it was a long, hard journey, right? So to answer it simply, one, I had to see that it was possible. That was the beginning. And to see that it was possible gave me a spark of hope. That's truthfully the point of my book. You're right. I wrote You Don't Have to Be Ruthless to Win, so that other individuals, other business leaders could see that, if Jonathan Kaiser could do it in commercial real estate, maybe I could do it in fill in the blank. And then if they want to do it, they need to know how to do it. So that's the other part, is I didn't know how to do it. And within my book, we have 15 core operating principles that we've built Kaiser upon. And I lay out how specifically. I've taken everything that I've learned on how to, with bumps and bruises and stops and starts and mess ups all along the way, and I've packed it into this book so that the reader, if they care about and want to create a culture of selfless service, if they want to become a leader of an organization and they want that leadership, or they want that culture to be selfless, they have everything they need to be able to do that. But for me, I had to learn as we went, learn as I go. But the momentum built, and I started seeing that the people that I was helping were appreciating what I was doing. I started to see that the self-improvement that I was working on myself on was leading to me being able to be a better leader, a better advisor, a better confidant, et cetera. And so it was this transformation process that once I got, when I heard this concept the first time, one of the things that stuck out to me was this idea of long game versus short game. So the reason why most people don't want to become a selfless leader is because it takes too long, it's too hard, it requires vulnerability, et cetera. It took me 5 years to start to create some level of material success out of this selfless reinvention that I've gone through and just helping people in the community. And so as I started to get success, it had been so long that I almost didn't believe it. It was kind of like, wow, is this really working? Because it had taken me so long to get there. But once you get past that point, all the good you put out in the world starts to come back. And that's what happened for me. And then once you get a feeling of, wow, this actually works, then for me it became, I got to teach this to other people because this is amazing. And if other people knew what I now know, they would never be ruthless again, because it's miserable being ruthless. It's miserable looking over your shoulder. It's miserable watching your back. It's miserable constantly being on high alert. And that's how most people in business are.
And you said something very important, and I was thinking it the whole time you were talking. I would think one of the biggest reasons people just say, look, what I'm doing is working now. I don't want to take the financial hit. Why would I change so profoundly and lead by example rather than do what's, always worked for me? Why would I do that? So I think that's probably one of the bigger reasons people just go, no, I'm good.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what I teach in my book is it doesn't have to be this, throw your life away to become a selfless leader. It's just integrating it in. I teach people all the time, the simplest way to embrace my methodology is one act of service at a time. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means everyone you interact with, if you bring a mindset of how can I help this person to the ultimate maximum that I can in the interaction and the time we have, and if you bring that mindset of service, then as you repeat that, you can still do all the normal things you would be doing. You can still do all the calls, all the meetings, all the whatever. But in those interactions, instead of being focused on what you can get out of it, focus on what you can give to that person. And over time, you'll be amazed at the kind of relationships, the kind of success that you can create that way.
And what you just said reminded me why salespeople are just universally hated, but it shouldn't be like that. I mean, some of the best salespeople I have ever met are the ones who become consultants. They walk you through why you're trying to do what you're doing, why you, you know, maybe need their process or their tool or whatever. Maybe you really don't. Maybe they can send you in another direction. But you always remember that person and how they actually helped you. Nobody wants to be sold.
Yeah,
nobody wants to be, have something crammed in their face. I mean, my spidey sense goes straight up and I'm out of there. I won't stick around.
Yeah, and everybody's that way, you know? And so that's why I say this is just rational, good business. This is not about, dying on the sword on trying to help people. This is, that's where people get the stuff wrong. I've created a successful company. We kick ass and take names, but we do it by loving and serving and giving. And that doesn't make us weak. It just makes us human, right? Because I think that's the natural state, is for us to love and serve. And that's what people are craving. So if you're in business, like you said, nobody wants to be sold. What do they really want? They want to be loved. They want to be appreciated. They want to be listened to. They want to be cared for. They want to know that somebody's got their back. To me, that's what service is. But to your point, the greatest salesman, so to speak, in the world that did it this way, there are the ones that have the most long-term sustainable success. So that's my message, is if you want to be a flash in the pan, this isn't for you. If you want to just get a quick hit and make some quick money and burn some bridges and get out, that's not what I'm teaching. I'm teaching the long game. But if you truly want long-term sustainable success, I don't believe there's a better way that you can do it than by helping and serving and loving people. And you can do it very strategically, like we talked about last time, right? Just identify those people in your world that you would love to do business with, that you would love to have as clients, or that you'd love to have as partners. Figure out ways that you can help them and watch what happens. I mean, it's really that simple. And if you just spend your time being in service to others, if you just spend your time loving and helping people, you'll be amazed on the other side of this what you can actually accomplish.
Absolutely. One of the things I hear you say is, and this is a quote, it's not about me. It took me the longest kind of time to figure that out. When I first started my business, it was all about me. You know, I'm an A-type personality. I'm a perfectionist, recovering, maybe. You know, I was always had to be the one in charge. And it took me the longest kind of time to realize, with a big, hammer to the head, it's not about me. It's about the people that I'm serving. And you say that these four words changed your life. How so?
I think at the end of the day, what people are really, really hungry for is someone that truly and genuinely cares about them, right? So it's so unique and so refreshing and so different when you're in an interaction with someone and that someone is living those four words, right? I mean, that's in our first principle. We live the statement, it's not about me. And from that place, amazing things are possible because people are hungry for that. People are starved for that. Typically, a conversation is two people trying to impress each other with how great they are. And it's insane. What if that conversation instead was two people trying to figure out how they can help each other? And one of the things that I found is that if everybody is always waiting for the other person to help them first before they open up and be comfortable. And so my whole mindset is do it first, right? And people say, but that's risky. What if they give you nothing back? Well, if you're expecting something back, you're not really getting what I'm saying anyways, because I'm not saying do a trade. I'm saying serve. And, the universe cannot handle an imbalance. 80%, 90% of the time when you help somebody, it comes back somewhere else. I would say 100% of the time, but all the skeptics on this call will discredit me. So
no, I agree with you. It's 100% of the time.
I truly
you don't know when it's going to come back.
Time.
Right.
You don't know how, when, or where, but you put it out there and it comes back. And so even if the individual that you are serving never you know, engages with you again, does anything for you, it doesn't matter because it'll come back somewhere.
Absolutely. Listen, you mentioned the 15 core principles, and I don't want you to give away all of them because I do want people to go get your book. I have your book. Thank you for sending it. It's a terrific book. But can you share the most important ones that you think people need to go, that needs to go on my list of things to really give some thought to?
I think if people can awaken to the possibility that the best way to succeed financially is to help other people selflessly, if they can actually see the truth in that and lean into that, the benefits on the other side that they will realize will be extraordinary. And that's what I'm inviting people to do, is I'm inviting people to join me in this movement of changing the business world through selfless service. That's why I wrote, You Don't Have to Be Ruthless to Win, right? I want people to help me change the world. I have a dream. I have a dream of a world where people selflessly help each other, regardless of personal gain, understanding it's in their best interest to do so. So like they're sitting down with other people. I can just see it in my mind's eye. Two really sharp graduates from the top schools sitting down, wanting to be titans, and their way of becoming a titan is trying to serve as many people in the community. Imagine if, as a business community, we unlocked the potential that we could all have by rather than withholding the good that we could do for everybody around us, by unleashing that and by reciprocally loving, serving, and helping. The good that we could do in the business world would be nothing short of phenomenal. And that's my vision. That's my dream. And that's what I'm up to. And that's why, you know, that's why I'm so grateful to be, you know, able to have these kind of conversations with awakened people like yourself, because it's important that we have the ability to join hands and say, we can do this. Let's do this together.
I agree. Where can, very quickly, and I'll ask you again before we've got about two more minutes, where can people find this book? It's on Amazon, isn't it?
It's on Amazon. You could also go to ruthlessbook.com, ruthless, R-U-T-H-L-E-S-S, book.com. And then if anybody's interested in connecting, if you have a lease that you'd like to have reviewed, again, like I mentioned earlier, just reach out. You can find us at Keyser.com, K-E-Y-S-E-R.com. And, you know, if we could be of service to you through the Keyser Institute, or if you're looking to have a speaker on this topic, we'd love to engage with you on both those regards as well.
Terrific. Very quickly, you had a 30-day positivity challenge. And
yes.
I think you wanted to share what you learned during that. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, so I believe that everything is a gift. And through that lens, a lot of the things that create frustration, you realize, are actually being done for you. So I decided early on in the company that I was going to view everything that happened as a gift and find three reasons why it was a gift. And so I wouldn't say anything negative. So I decided I'm not going to say anything negative, and I'm only going to say positive things. And what I realized is the positive started growing and the negative started shrinking. And so now that's the mindset that I live in. I refuse to speak negative about anyone or anything. I'm not perfect, but pretty much I'm pretty darn close now. And I simply create powerfully and positively, and it has created unbelievable greatness in my world and in those around me.
You know, I have to say, when I was younger, my grandmother, who, as it turns out, was quite a wise woman in her very simple, quiet way, and she would never say a bad word about anybody, and I always noticed it, but I didn't understand it. I actually thought she was a bit simple. She wasn't. She's one of the wisest people I've ever met, and I miss her.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it took me the longest kind of time to figure out what she was doing, who she was, and just how phenomenal she was. Farmer's wife, didn't have much to say about anything, but when she did speak, I remember my head would always whip around and I'd look at her and it would stick with me to this day.
Yeah.
She's been gone a long time. Anyway, well, thank you for bringing up my grandmother in my memory. I really appreciate that. Listen, Jonathan.
Yeah, it's my honor.
Oh, thank you so much. Where can people find you on the web? You've already shared your book, but you can share it again.
Yeah, sure. So ruthlessbook.com or Kaiser, KEYSER.com.
Perfect. Jonathan, thank you so much for coming back. It's really been wonderful speaking with you again. And listen, I'm watching and I'm following along with what you do. And I agree with you. I think that we need to, you know, all put our cudgels down and quit blaming and yelling and going, oh, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I catch myself doing it. I'll watch a lot of what's going on and my instant reaction is to kind of bow up and go, what the heck is wrong with you people? Until I calm down and go, hang on, what's really going on here? So that has been some terrific advice, and thank you for that. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and honestly anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Jonathan, thank you again.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.